everyone, and welcome back to Podnuts Pro. It's the PNP with the M&M and M. Here we are, show number 90. I am Marvin B., and I am joined by Mr. Matt Rainey. How are you doing, sir?
Fantastic. Thank you.
All right. And with Mr. Martin Obando, and how are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing good. I'm doing, I don't think I'm as fantastic as Rainey, but I'm doing well.
Well, you know, we've got Comcastic here. We've got Gigatastic at Rainey's place. So you've got to get a orgastic something.
Orgastic.
Sorry.
I know. I just,
Oregon, yeah,
that,
I couldn't
think
make
we
it.
Should go with that one. That's a winner.
All right. I'm orgastic then. Then how are you, Mr. Marvin, tonight?
I am fine. I am dealing with normal weather. I understand somebody's had to deal with snow, and we don't have to do that down here.
Yep. It's we got first snow the other day, and then went away. We're expecting more snow in tomorrow. Looking forward to it. We were talking before the show, and I love your comment of saying you don't remember the last time you seen snow, and I thought that was quite... quite ironic, because I'm not sure the last time I've seen the sun. So,
but do you like the snow?
I do, actually. I do like the snow. My wife, on the other hand, does not, and would rather it was snowing. And I was up on a higher elevation, and we got maybe an eighth of an inch, maybe. And it wasn't you could still see the grass through the snow, and it was just some of the structures had snow on them. And my wife wanted to know whether or not I should come get the car, so I'd have to take my little car, drive down the hill to her, swap out to the four-wheel drive car, and then drive back up the hill. I said, no, I just stayed up there. And by the time I was done with and I'll tell the story, but by the time I was done with this project, it was all gone. So
I like the snow. We don't see it very often, and it rarely stays on the ground. Once every 10 years, yeah, you might get an inch, and then, of course, they close the schools. It's fun.
There's supposed to be snow and ice tomorrow, and there's already schools are closing. It's just cold. There's no snow on the ground. They're already closing schools for tomorrow. So that's a... There's a website called Is It Snowing in PDX, or I'll find it. I'll put it in the show notes, but it'll say yes or no. But see, in here in Portland, where I'm at, or I'm actually in the west side of Portland, I can be in snow and depending on which way I go, within 30 minutes to an hour, I'll be in snow. So I don't have to live in it to be able to visit it.
I'm sorry, you lost me when you said you had to drive up and down a hill. I can't remember the last time I saw one of those either.
Yeah, I think the high point in Louisiana is like 530 feet or something like that.
I don't think we even have that.
That's two extra digits that Marvin doesn't even have.
I was gonna say,
you got somewhere between 0 and 9. After that, he gets.
I mean, our landfills are biggest, our high point down here. So
the air becomes too thin for Marvin at 9 feet.
I mean, getting on the roof is kind of a challenge, you know.
Well, okay. So in Florida, the highest point is 312 feet.
Are you really in Florida?
I just Googled it. Yep. And I was right. Louisiana, 535 feet. And they actually call it a mountain, Mount Driscoll. Driscoll Mountain, 535 feet.
See, I'm at 197 feet.
I might go climb it just because it's there.
And then you're going to take a sled with you in case it's snowing that high?
Maybe some O2, some oxygen.
Some white caps at the top of that mountain. Okay, so we've digressed already. So speaking of snow, this week I am... riding solo down here in the state of Florida. I had to get up early this morning to pack up the wife so she could drive to Atlanta. They do an early Christmas up there where her family, which a lot of them are from Ohio, and her brother lives in Atlanta. She's got a sister that lives in Charlotte. So they drive up there and do early Christmas. And I used to go to that family affair. Well, let me rephrase that. I went once, and I tried to go two other times. But I kept missing the flight, and it kind of got to the point where the wife just stopped even planning on me to go. So
you're missing them because of too much work?
Yeah, like the first time I was at a client that morning and was driving back to the house to get my suitcase and head over to the airport. and a client called with an emergency of a down server, and I had to go take care of it, and I just didn't get back in time. I got to the airport, and they were already pulling the plane away from the gate, and so I couldn't make that, and I couldn't get another flight out until the next morning, or no, the next afternoon, so I would have been getting there late, late Saturday just to turn around and fly back out Sunday. So we decided not to make that trip. And a similar situation another time where I couldn't make a flight. Oh, it was the hurricane. Actually, it was a hurricane coming, and we were in the cone of death. And I couldn't leave unless we were out of the cone of death. So, of course, the night that my flight's supposed to leave, we're in the cone. And the next morning, we're not in the cone.
You're in death.
So
it, one of those isn't your fault then. So you should still be invited at least.
Yeah, that's all right. I make her come to my family events, and so
until she can't, I just can't make it to that one.
I drove. I hit the traffic was crazy.
Yeah,
there was an elevation shift.
So at this point, you had nobody working with you to look at that kind of issue since you were going away, or with a server issue?
Well, at that point, let's see, the first time I probably did, but because it was a server issue, I handled all the server stuff. And the cone of death is just, you know, we're all on call during a hurricane, so it doesn't matter.
Right. That must have been a late hurricane if it's December.
Well, I'm trying to think. That was a July event. They do a summer event as well.
Okay.
So.
Christmas in July.
Yes.
I see.
But
one thing you have to worry about, though, when you try and take vacation or holidays and you're working by yourself or a small crew.
Yep. Yeah.
I'm sure, Martin, you have to deal with that, too, huh?
Yeah. I'll be traveling over the holidays, but I'm going to a site where I'm going to have internet and I'll just work remotely. So I've already scheduled jobs down there. So I have some clients in the same town. So I'll already be working.
You're traveling on vacation and you schedule jobs.
It's not really. See, that's the problem. It's not really vacation.
It's a working vacation.
I'm just not working. I'm just not working out of Oregon. I'll be working out of California.
In shorts and a t-shirt.
It's on the coast. It's not really shorts and t-shirt. It's still cold and windy. Glad we don't have any cones of death up here.
I'm just glad I'm not in that situation. When I go on vacation, I'm on vacation.
It's been a long time since I've actually done that. And I have to kind of go someplace where I'm forced to not. And that's like, I went to Disneyland and I'm forced to leave my, you know, phone in my pocket and leave my laptop somewhere else. And then when I'm not on the rides, I can check my email and stuff like that. But then, you know, but it's been many years since I've been shut the thing down, walk away. I don't care.
At the conventions, I know when you and I were at the conventions, and I saw other people doing this as well, Marvin and a lot of other people. They're out there in the hallways talking to a client or on their computers working, and they're missing the conference because they have an issue that they have to deal with.
You didn't see me in the hallway doing that.
No, maybe not you. You weren't working at all?
I worked one time, and I was up in the room.
Okay. So maybe it was other people, but it was pretty common to see that. And
yes, I'm just glad
I don't have to deal with that. It just would annoy me.
No, I've missed many group dinners because of that, because of the 3-hour time difference. I'll go to Columbus or something like that, and then next thing I know, everybody wants a dinner at 6, which is great, but it's 3 o'clock and I still have to work. And yeah.
So this is kind of a sidebar of what we were going to talk about, but you know, Rainey, you mentioned it earlier with the fact of, you know, we're talking about supporting businesses where we don't always get the luxury of when things go wrong and we have to respond. And, you know, for folks like Obando and I, who, I mean, for the most part, I think, you know, we are closer to having that situation of a, you know, what if you get hit by a bus question that the customers always want to ask. Even though Obando, I know you've got a full-time person now, I've got subcontractors that I can call all the time, but it's still, you know, kind of sketchy sometimes that we can't always just, you know, turn off the phone, don't answer email, because if a business is down, you know, they've got to work. And either we have to respond or we have to have people working with us that can respond. And that's just the nature of business, as opposed to, you know, computer repair stores or solo techs that are doing just residential, stuff like that.
Yep.
Yeah, the way we handle it for our clients is we call our bigger clients and we get their holiday schedule, and they're closed, let's say, Christmas Eve and Christmas Day. And we follow a lot of our large clients about when we're going to close. But when we're closed, we're closed. I mean, I guess if a client called
and a server's on fire.
If it's on fire, I'll just tell them to put it out. We'll come pick it up after the holidays because there's not much we can do.
Sorry, I'm on vacation. Leave a message after the beep.
Call the fire department. We can't help you.
Please hang up and call 911.
That's right. If your server's on fire, hang up, call 911. If you'd like to submit a tech support request, please press 1.
Leave a message and we'll check them after the holidays. But no, we call our big clients, and that's going to be 95% of our calls is, you know, a few of 4, 5, or 6 of our big clients. And the other ones, if they call, it's not like it's that big of a deal. They're smaller operations and they probably aren't working anyway.
Yeah, that is a good policy. And I do the same thing. You find out, you know, for my law firms, most of them are closed if the courts are closed. So that's always a good time for us. I can probably take a half day then, you know, all the holiday schedules. And, you know, if you've got school systems, you know, whenever they're closed, you don't have to worry about it. Snow days, cold days, whatever, you know, in Portland.
Well, like, you know, they're already closing school tomorrow, but yet my first job first thing in the morning is deploying a new server. So it just means that, you know what it means is that there's not going to be as many people on the road tomorrow.
Yep, you'll get there faster.
That's right.
You can save 5 minutes.
I can save 5 minutes. Except for the fact that then there's not going to be as many people on the back roads that I get to this one shop. So the problem is that now the roads may be slippery. So I may have to drive slower.
All righty.
All right. So let's see. We've got a stack of email that we want to get to later in the show. But let's talk about some jobs and some customer stories and some wonderful trench time.
I'll go first. Yesterday, 2 calls back to back. I got a strange email attachment, and I opened it, and nothing came up. It just was empty, so I closed it. Is that a problem? That was the first one. It was a pretty big client. So I called her. Show me the email. Oh, I already deleted it. Okay. Did you delete deleted items? Oh, yes. Okay. So she's quick to delete the evidence of what she opened. She says, well, so-and-so got the same message. Okay. So I connect to that computer. She still had it in the deleted items. Found the email attachment, ran it through that malwr.com that I think I've mentioned. Mm-hmm. I ran through VirusTotal. Of course, it's bad. And it was a generic email. And I had to show her, this is what you're looking for. This is a generic email. It's designed to be generic to mail out to thousands or millions of people. It's not going to have anything specific. It's not going to mention a company name, who it's from. So these kind of things. She says, well, I know. I shouldn't have opened it. I was stupid to open it. So anyway, for some reason, it didn't infect her. I had her unplug her network cable first until I would see what's going on. Looked at the computer. No running processes. Nothing in startup. Nothing in the registry. Nothing. Nothing happened. I did a system restore on her computer the day before. Booted up, connected the network, scanned it. It was all clean. But while I was on the phone with this customer, another customer called. They got a strange email attachment. They opened it, but now they can't open any of their files. Everything has the .OSIRIS extension on it. Same kind of email. You know, it's generic PO number for invoice, whatever, with the Word document. But yet she opened it, got infected, and it started encrypting files right away. And by the time she called me, all of her files were encrypted. So I don't know if she was in the same batch of emails that went out, because they both said they got it about, you know, the same time when I asked them both. And they don't know each other. They're in different cities. I don't think they know each other. But they both got hit. One, for some reason, did not get infected, which saved me a lot of work, because this is a big client with a lot of stuff to restore. And they've gotten it before. They've gotten it twice before. And they're 2 employees fewer now.
so you can narrow down who the instigator is.
Yeah, it's pretty obvious. And so, you know, of course the girl's kind of worried, because, you know, she knows what happens to people who get this on the network. But she did get infected, and maybe the system restore helped, and it couldn't run, and it cleared out the registry settings and the run keys. I don't know, but I couldn't find anything before I did the system restore. So they were good, but one is completely gone. And this is one that set up her own backup. She uses Backblaze, and she told the receptionist, "I use what Matt told me to use." Well, that's not exactly true. What Matt told you to, Matt told you there were backups like Backblaze, Carbonite, Mosey. There are things like that. And she picked Backblaze, which is fine, but she set it up and asked her, "You got two choices. You can, we can restore it from backup, or you can pay the ransom. Is there important data that's not backed up?" "Well, I don't know. I was going to have you check the backup after I set it up last year, but I never called you." Okay. Let's go into the back. We logged into Backblaze, saw all of her data was there. So she selected, she's backed up her whole hard drive, basically the whole hard drive. So she was good. But I got the computer in, and I hook it. I have a WatchGuard that have a dedicated port that's basically isolated. I can plug it in; it won't touch any of my other computers. So I plug it in, and I follow the instructions to, you know, if you want to pay the ransom, because I'm curious what the ransom is. $2,300 is what they wanted for the ransom.
Do you offer to give that out of your pocket?
Funny. I gave her the option. I said, "Here's the ransom, $2,300. Or we could pay me and I can clean it and restore the file." She says, "Oh no, restore the file." So working on that. But $2,300, I haven't seen one that much personally.
So was your bill $2,295?
It was $2,400. Yeah. I topped them by $100.
You're like, "Booyah, take that."
So I could beat them.
Yeah. Here's a question, because I'm assuming that they're on some sort of hosted mail.
Okay. She is on a terrible email service, a POP3 email service from a local ISP.
I'm sorry. That just ruins my question.
If you can't see, because you can't see video right now, Marvin is actually rocking back and forth.
POP mail.
And she knows it's terrible. We talked about it when I set her up last year, how terrible it was. And she said, "Oh, it works for me." Okay.
All right. So let's assume that they're on a legitimate email platform. So I've got a couple of customers that are still on hosted Exchange. One of them is an older Exchange 2010. And of course, they're getting those emails because they're unwilling to purchase, you know, some sort of mail filtering appliance, spam filtering appliance, or subscribe to any of the products that you can put in front of Exchange, because, you know, Exchange itself is not very good. You can put in the, you know, the block list, Spam House, Barracuda, and all that stuff, and that'll catch some, but it's not going to catch all. And there's some that you can put in that will catch more of them, but the problem is they catch a lot of legitimate mail as well. So if I remember correctly, you also have some on-prem Exchange servers, right?
Quite a few.
And what are you using to protect those from these types of things?
We put most of them through our Barracuda spam filter, and a couple are going through GFI mail filter, but most of them through a Barracuda spam filter.
And that, is that Barracuda in-house too?
It's ours, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And
we have two of them, that different locations that we, they're...
And you're charging them, obviously, a fee for that. Is it per domain, per mailbox?
We usually do per domain, and we know about how many addresses they have, so we give them a price that covers it. It works out to a couple dollars per mailbox, but we don't tell them that. We just give them a price.
$24.95.
Well, I mean, some of them we do $100 a month, you know, some are $50 a month. They're all different, but it's roughly based on how many mailboxes they have.
All right. I've looked at the Barracuda, and SonicWall also has their spam filtering appliance, but, you know, customers are like, "Well, the free's been working, and we know what we think about free."
Yeah, the problem with those, well, one benefit of having the Barracuda is I can go look at the logs easily and see what's coming in, what's being blocked, why it's blocked. It's a little bit harder when you're dealing with just Exchange as far as the logs, going through logs. And since she deleted that email already, I was able to find it in the Barracuda spam filter. Now, for some reason, Barracuda let it through. It blocked probably 7, 8, 9 of them, but it let 2 through. I was able to go in and see the exact message and download the attachment and scan it all through, all from the Barracuda, since she already deleted it. Oh, it's one thing funny about this girl. I said, oh, you deleted it already? Yeah, I deleted it already. Okay, well, who has it? So I looked at the girl who had it. After I looked at it, I deleted it. And she asked me, well, you said not to delete it. Why did you delete hers? I said, no, I said for you not to delete it because I want to review it. I've reviewed it, so I delete it. You don't delete it. You just call me, and I will delete it after I look at it. She was very defensive. I don't know. She may have been worried, as I said, but she was very defensive about why I deleted it when I told her not to.
You have delete. Did you tell her you have delete authorization?
You got rid of the evidence. I don't want you to get rid of the evidence. I need to look at it.
You are not authorized to delete virus and malware infections.
Yeah, if you open it, don't delete it. Let me look at it. You can close it, but don't delete it. We all know it was you. You can't hide it.
Well, the reason I ask is because about the in-house is because I know that a lot of these companies now have cloud-based spam filtering, so you don't have to purchase in-house and have, you know, the traffic come from, you know, the internet to you and then back out to her email. You can keep it kind of out of your office if you don't have enough bandwidth.
Right.
So that was all.
And this is actually at a different, we have a NOC at a different location that's got dedicated circuits for this kind of stuff.
Okay. So you're not bringing this stuff into your business and then back out of your business. You're going to a NOC.
We have another,
yeah.
Our own office. We rented another building that we had that stuff in.
Yeah. So that's just the reason that's just something to think about for people listening. It's like, well, how do I set this up? And if I buy one in house, then you have to reroute all your traffic. Like I wouldn't put a Barracuda spam filter for my clients in here because all the traffic would have to come into my house through that and then back out of, you know what I mean? Back out of my house, back to their mail provider. That's just, it's not going to work. And my kids are not going to like that. And my family won't like that because I've just taken down our network.
Right.
So.
And your cable provider may not like it, your ISP for your house, because they probably measure your traffic. And if they see that you're providing non-typical residential traffic, they may ding you for it.
Yeah, but in Oregon, internet up here is like trees and fresh air.
Okay, a lot of trees, but do you have fresh air?
Oh, yeah, we got fresh air.
From all the trees.
Trees make fresh air. And trees provide internet access. Anyways, okay. Sorry. This is what you get for an hour and 45 minutes worth of sleep. So,
did you check with Al Gore on that?
Oh, that's a good point.
All right. So with the trees and fresh air, Obando, do you have any trench time stories?
Yeah. Well, one thing I just want to back up off of Rainey's is that going into the holiday season, where we're in it, is that a lot of people will be getting these emails. I did have a client, I talked about it on the show, who received the Thor. They received the Thor one. We ended up just wiping, reloading the whole computer, getting it back. I replied to the company a couple times asking them about, you know, wanting to set up a backup. And today they replied back and they pretty much said, no, we're good. So I now have a documentation that they do not want to implement any kind of backup. So in the future, when they get the Thor or the Loki or the Osiris, we're just going to wipe and reload and start from scratch. And anything they had, they will be gone and it'll be lost because it does jump into, they use Dropbox, but it does jump into Dropbox and encrypt all that data as well.
So they don't have much company data or they don't need
data? It's a property management company. And so what a lot of the important files will, and I'm going to air quote important files there, client files. So when a client comes in and applies for a residence, they then scan all that stuff into their property management software in the cloud. So then it gets backed up there. But any photos they take on site, any issues or any documents that they have internally within the business that may not go into that application, that's what she lost.
I see. But probably photos, they probably also attach to some kind of client file in that software too.
Yes, they can. But, you know, if they found, say, somebody damaged the swimming pool, right, and they take photos for that, that's not really attached to a client. They may have that evidence just in a desktop or in their photos. That stuff is gone. Then, and I don't know, and I think this is the first time, and it didn't seem to be too bad. And, you know, you never really know what you don't have until you lose it. or what you have until you lose it. And so this one went pretty smooth, but I have a feeling if this happens again to one of their bigger sites, because this was a kind of a smaller location, but if it happens to one of their bigger companies or bigger locations where it actually will jump across and maybe hit three or four computers instead of just this one, I think they'll change their tune after that. But in the meantime, I've talked to them. I wrote them up a couple of emails. We talked about it, and they've chosen not to. But so I've been now just being diligent and making sure that my clients know that when you receive emails and it looks funny, you know, that's exactly what happened last time. She says, I looked at the email. It sounded suspicious, but I went ahead and clicked and opened it anyways. And nothing happened until I rebooted my computer. So maybe did she, I was curious, did she reboot her computer before calling you?
She did not, but I had her unplug her network cable and reboot a few times to see if something would start running.
But after the network cable was unplugged, right?
Right. After the network, I want to see if any of her local files got encrypted. Right. I mean, I connected. I looked in the registry, startup keys, you know, schedule task. I didn't see anything that was going to run, so I had her there was cable still connected then without rebooting. I checked everything. I had her unplug the network cable, reboot, and see if something happened, and nothing ever happened. So I walked her through a system restore and then plugged her back in, and she's been good, and it's been 2 days.
Yeah, no, I haven't been hit with anything lately. As far as jobs go here, I did a simple Windows XP. I have a client who still has two Windows XP computers. We got rid of one, and it was running an old version of their software, so we had to upgrade that. And this was, you know, I allotted about 3 hours to do this, and it took 6.5 hours for a upgrade to the brand new computer, deploy the new computer, but back up all the data conversion, do all the conversion, and then back it up, put on the new computer, restore. So the whole, it took a lot longer than expected. That was kind of a big project. They went with the, anyways, it was fun. I know what's going on next. I'm doing another one for the same company on the 20th. And I can see what they can do ahead of time. They don't need me sitting there watching them run through some data. Deploying a server tomorrow here in my office. It's just a data server, nothing too fancy. It's going to be for another vet clinic that I maintain. And they're going to a product that another vet clinic the two owners are partner owners run. So this is going to be nice because this will just be a dedicated server just for that application, which is pretty big and bulky. So I'm interested to see how it's going to work for this client. And then hopefully in the future, I can get the other client to switch over to a dedicated server, because right now that one is not, and it keeps having issues. So it's been just, you know, and then just your normal stuff, but nothing, can't think of anything, you know, funny or silly that happened over the week. I was busy, but nothing stood out in my mind of being, you know, fantastic.
So I have a question for you. And I personally don't do this, but I have gone into businesses and I've seen this happen when what people name their servers. And I'm just curious, if you put a server at a vet clinic, do you name it like Big Dog or something? Because I've seen people do that.
Right. No, actually, their server is called HDC, and I have no idea what it stands for.
HDC, something domain controller.
Maybe, but it has not, that has nothing to do with the clinic. The other clinic that I take care of, it's named, actually the server name is part of the application they use. And then the other one that I started and maintained, it's like PDC, but no. But the passwords now, those are animal names. there are animal names in the passwords. But yeah, generally for me, it doesn't matter where it is. It's usually, you know, I'll use PDC or DC or something along those lines, especially if there's multiple servers. The problem I run into is that somebody will say, call me up and I haven't heard from them in a while, or they're not a contracted client, and they'll say, the server's down, it's called this. And I have to go through my, you know, mental Rolodex of figuring out. No. Now, the problem is I have 7 servers named exactly the same way with seven different clients. So.
One thing I will go back to that, the Osiris thing and the other thing you got. I know WatchGuard in the latest release, one thing they have now is a feature to strip out in the SMTP proxy, and probably in any proxy, strip out macro enabled documents, which is useful now. If it detects a macro document, it'll just strip it from the attachment to prevent it from going out, which is one thing you can enable if you want. We're starting to do that at different places.
Very nice. I did hear back from the college. So early on, we had talked about one of the gentlemen that I knew, and he was at the college, the IT of the college, and they were running out of bandwidth. They had all their network going through a little home router.
The little Linksys home router.
So I got back in touch with him, hadn't heard from him in a while, and he said, you know what, he's almost done with his term as that person, the IT coordinator. And so they're, and this, so it's pretty much, it's kind of been shoved off to the next person and we'll see what happens, but it doesn't look likely. I think what they want and what they want to spend are two different things. We'll see what happens.
So hopefully the next elected IT coordinator will want to solve those problems.
Well, it works fine. You just got to keep rebooting the router.
Right. Those things don't make, right.
No,
those are not sequiturs. It works fine, but you have to reboot it.
Right. I hear you. It works. It's not.
So in their
eyes, we can fix this by just power cycling the router every now and then.
So when is the next election?
Oh, gosh. I don't know. It's soon.
Because you should be there.
Well, I don't want to drive all the way down there.
As the newly elected president is sworn in, you are there to say, I am here to make your tenure so much easier. Could you just approve the appropriation of budgets for this one project and get them before they have to go in front of the Greek council, and get all of their funding for homecoming? And
well, see, it sounded like all the students that live in that house pitch in.
Okay, so then you'll need to be there on orientation day to meet their parents.
Right. So I need to plan this out for maybe the 2017, 2018 school year, come up with donuts, coffee, and then we'll see what happens.
Yeah, you don't want your kids to suffer with poor internet. No, that's what you pitch to the parents as they're coming into orientation. Have a little flyers,
This is a fairly party kid.
Tell them if they can't get online here, they may be back home to get on your internet. Okay.
That is probably the one that'll get them.
Hey, one thing. I remember that server that they didn't want any passwords?
Yes.
We put that in this past week.
Really? Did they sign anything?
I did not have them signing, but I have emails. But they're no worse off than they were before. I mean, it's just another – it's just a beefier server that now when they get new computers, I can join them to the domain. We just set up a script to map a drive and copy the data over. So it's actually a real domain controller file server. It's just script to map the drive for them. Easy install. And now that person is so much happier that her computer is faster. One, they're on gigabit now because they had an old 10100 switch. And nobody's accessing her computer for the file. So they're happy, which I guess is what matters.
Well, and you've got a good foundation for the next time they're ready to do something.
Yeah. We told them as they go fall, we're going to start joining them to the domain when they get
business class computers.
If they get them from us, because if they just go get it on their own, they're going to get it from, the local store, and they're going to have Home Edition on them. And they may not even call us when they get a new computer. They may just copy the script over and put a new computer in. I don't know. It's a new client, so we'll see what they do. It's another client that's supposed to do their own backup, and I don't think they did yet. So I told them they didn't want us to do the backup. They were going to do it. But I will follow up with them and remind them or check with them and see if they did it. But they need to do it.
Actually, I do have something that I did. I forgot. It actually goes back to last week's show. We were asked, how can we validate our backups and how do we verify our backups? So I'll be deploying another version of Shadow Protect. I'm not sure I'm going to do it tonight, but it's going to be definitely this weekend for the school. And one of the things I went in there is when you get Shadow Protect, you can also grab their what's called their Image Manager. So the Shadow Protect is the application that makes the backups. An Image Manager needs to be on a computer. It can be on the same computer. They recommend that it's not. It doesn't need to be on a domain controller. It could just be on another computer somewhere else. Okay. Then in that Image Manager program, you point to your images. And then Image Manager has its own set of tools. And one of the set of tools that it has is it validates and tests and makes sure that the backup is correct. So I went back through a couple of my clients that had that, followed it up, looked at it. There's great how-tos. So now I get emails that tell me that the backup has been completed, but then I also get emails that tell me that the backup files are valid and successful. So I still don't get, they still don't have the way that Marvin gets the screenshots from Datto, but if you are running Shadow Protect, you can get that validation that backups are valid, good, and ready to be deployed if need be.
Well, that's good.
That's free.
Yeah. And just, to clarify, when you're doing backup, you don't have to have the big Mac Daddy backups. to, you know, make sure it's working, just get a backup program that, you know, does verification, you know, that it's going to verify that the backups are good, that the copies are good. There's a lot of backup programs that will have that built in. So they're not going to have the great screenshots that we talk about, or, you know, they can spin up a virtual machine, but at least you've got another level that you can say, okay, the backup is at least checking itself to make sure that it's a good quality backup. Unlike
I did verification for two backup systems this week because I had to restore files for two.
Hey, you know, the backup works. That guy, hey, that was
actually three if I count the OSIRIS person. So,
well, that's what we talked about. We said, how do you verify? You say, would I have to restore good data? Ta-da! Good verification. Validation for December. Checked.
Validation for 2016. Check.
Yeah, I'm going to wait till the 7th. Oh, that's coming up of December before I validate it.
Oh. I don't need to do it again until next December.
See, that's 364 days. Kick back. Watch some movies.
Okay. So I don't really have any great tips or anything that I did this past week. I mean, I had a couple of interesting jobs, but they're still in progress. So I'm going to wait till they finish and bring them next week. But I do have a great little story of a client that called me today, that they've been a client of mine for years, and we've pretty much set up everything for them now, all their servers, their desktops. They are moving towards HIPAA compliance. So we are getting them on secure mail. We are putting mobile device management on their iPads. We're doing some other stuff. I got them a backup Datto appliance so that they've got good quality backups that are also off-site. So there's a new doctor there. It's a medical center who is a little demanding. And so he has his one of his medical people, I don't even know what they're called. They're not nurses, so medical assistants, maybe, calls my office today saying that, you know, the doctor needs the scanner to work so that it scans to the T drive like the other copier down the hall. So I'm like, well, we did that years ago. All your copiers scan to the T drive. No, this one doesn't. And we asked Toshiba when they came out, and Toshiba said, you have to do that. And I said, well, if it's a Toshiba, Toshiba can do it. No, that you have to do it. So I wasn't at the office. I told him I'd have to drive back to the office. So I get here, I log into their system, and I'm looking at the two Toshiba copiers that they have. Everything is set up. Scan to folder is set up. Authentication is, you know, proper. So I call over, and it's not even the Toshiba copier they're talking about. They're talking about a Lexmark machine in another room that nobody ever uses. So I said, oh, okay, well, let's get into that. When I get in, I see that there's a T drive there. I look at the credentials to scan the folder. They're there. And I'm like, so has anybody ever tried scanning on this one? That's the one you're calling about, right? Well, okay, so what do we do? And I'm like, well, I'm not there, but I assume that if you're at the scanner, there's a scan button somewhere. Yes, scan. Oh, T drive? Yes, T drive. Oh, look at that. So now I just hit the green button. Yeah, put a piece of paper in there, hit the green button, see if it scans. Oh, would you look at that? And I'm just sitting there thinking to myself, I am now going to charge you for calling me because I just had to verify that this worked, even though it was set up years ago, only because no one bothered to show somebody how to use it. Because I'm sure I sat with somebody and showed them standing there on site, here's your button, press this, do this, and verified it worked. But
you had to spend time looking at the Toshiba, then to realize it wasn't the Toshiba, right, and then go do this one. Yeah, it's time. It doesn't matter if it's, I mean, absolutely billable.
Yep. So that was actually one of the brighter calls of my day. So I just thought I'd talk about that.
I like those kind of calls. I get those kind of calls all the time when they just, they don't even try or they don't look at it. Yeah. I love those calls.
Yeah.
I build them when I set it up. And I build them again to remind them that I set it up.
Yep. Assumptions make you money. Yep. I just assumed it didn't work because it's been sitting back here. Well, did you try? No. Awesome.
Okay. So, all right. So those are, like I said, I've got some good ones that'll build into better stories down the road. So let's dive into our, you hear that?
That's a stack.
That's a stack of email. All right. So,
wait, did you print all those emails just so you could do that?
Yes. Yes.
That's why Florida doesn't have trees.
No, these are from
fresh air.
We're getting trees from you.
Oh, stop stealing my air.
We import our paper. We import our air. The sand we get from somewhere. They bring a barge of sand off the ocean and just dump it for us.
I'm starting to wheeze. The air's getting thin over here because of that.
So let's see. Just like we have an M&M show, today we have Miller time for our emails. So we've got two emails, one from a Jason Miller and one from an Alan Miller. And I believe, let's see, Obando, is Jason the one that you talked to?
No, Chris Webb.
Okay, that's not even a Miller.
I mean, I did reply to Alan Miller's. I was the first one to reply to Alan Miller's question. Or
was
a statement.
That a question or a comment?
It was a statement.
Yeah, that was a clarification of a show topic from many, many moons ago that we had put out the challenge of finding out how many O's in Google can you put in a web link before it doesn't work. So Alan Miller actually went above and beyond. And Alan, if we had a prize, we'd send it to you, but we don't. But here's his response.
Don't anybody give away my air. I just want to say that right now. Just give him some sand or something.
So Alan writes, there's a limit of 63 characters for the label part of a domain name, which leaves a maximum of 59 O's. So 59 is a Dreamhost park page. 58 is a GoDaddy park page. 57 is some third-party park page with sponsored listings. And 56 is g56google.com, which lets you do Google searches from a themed page for Google Search with Style. So if you have the patience to type 56 O's, you can search in style.
Or you can just go to g56google.com.
G56google.com.
Oh, wait. Mine just kicks over to something else. Interesting.
And he did 55. 55 is blocked by Firefox's deceptive site. 54 is a domain parked in Finland. 53, I think, is someone's art page. 52 redirect to someone else's park page. 51 doesn't find a server. Same with 50. And that exhausts my patience, he said.
I'm just impressed that Alan actually put in 56 O's and then went down from there, or 59 and then went down. So that's really awesome.
I have a gently used water pick as a prize. I don't know if he wants that.
Oh, well. Water pick. I have a half-eaten bag of teriyaki beef jerky here. I mean, I don't know.
We can eat that and then use the gently used water pick.
Boom. You're Alan Miller. You're set.
That's a full Friday night.
How's that stack going there, Marvin?
All right. So email number two. This one is from Jason Miller, who has a POS and camera system question. And basically he writes, I have a customer that has Charter cable internet with 5 static IPs. And we want 1 static IP for the internal network, which he writes as POS systems and wireless for a retail store. They also have a camera system they want to be able to access from the app on their phone from anywhere. Of course, you have to open ports to do this, but you can't do this on the main network since they will fail PCI compliance with the port scans. Usually, we just put the camera system on a separate network by itself since we have static IPs. So all that being said, here are the questions. 1, how do you normally handle this situation? And 2, since the Sonic Wall handles multiple WANs, can we put another interface to a WAN and then make another interface, add a separate subnet for the camera system, and have it route through the second WAN connection? This would allow for the main static to be port scanned and then the second static from the same provider and the same modem, just a different static to be used for the camera system. So has anyone done this, and would this be a correct way to do this? I guess the main goal would be the camera system would be behind a firewall, except for the open ports, to help protect it from being hacked.
Okay, so what I would do, and I know he mentioned Sonic Wall, but I don't have a Sonic Wall, so I'll answer it the WatchGuard way, the way I would do it with a WatchGuard. You only have one internet connection, one modem, right? So you got one cable going from your modem to your router. So I would just assign, if you have five static IPs, you can assign multiple IPs to the same as a secondary networks to the external interface. So your external interface can have four or five static IPs assigned to it. One is primary, other one's a secondary. So, and then you can route traffic from the secondary IP to whatever internal IP address you want. And it can be a different subnet or the same subnet, but it's only coming in from that. You can set the secondary IP to forward that traffic, not your main one. Does that make sense? Am I explaining that well?
Yes. It's the same process I do with the Sonic Wall.
Okay. And then to go out, you can also specify to go out using that one. So you don't need to enable another interface. You just need to assign that IP as a secondary IP on the external interface is what I would do.
And I would just add that you can still do a VLAN if you do want it to be separate. You can, you know, segregate, you know, maybe port 3 or 4 as a separate VLAN and have that assigned externally to the second static IP address or third static IP address, just like Matt mentioned. So you could do both. You can have the multiple static IPs going to multiple VLANs and do your port forwarding just basically to the VLANs.
Martin, anything to add to that?
Nope.
Very good.
Okay. So to answer your question, Jason, you're on the right path. You just don't need the second internet, but you can do the multiple static IPs and the multiple networks, and you should be good to go.
Yeah. And right. It says, has anyone done this? And I have done that quite a few times for different things. So it does work that way.
Okay. All right. So we do have another email that we are once again going to hold off on to give it ample time in a show. We're probably going to dedicate a big bulk of the show to that. And so we are good here. That clears the stack of email. Oh, wait. Do we have a late entry?
Well, I've got an email that was just sent to me.
Oh, well, let's hear it.
It's just for Martin. Oh, he's going to share.
That's right. This one was just to me, so everybody else except Chris Webb. This is just between you and I, Chris. Everybody else can turn off your...
Anyway. I'll mute myself now.
Sorry. Thank you. As he says, on a previous show, you guys mentioned you're not a big fan or you had problems with Ubiquiti problem with products. I was curious what things you don't like about them. I was considering switching to them until I heard you guys say that. So it's not that I've had problems with Ubiquiti. This is me, and I'll honest, this could be kind of a lazy thing, but Ubiquiti needs a controller somewhere. You have to download and install an application that acts as the controller. It either needs to be on site, or you can do some port forwarding and some routing, and you can have it outside of the location. So I've got a friend who has a computer company. He has his Ubiquiti controller on site at his business, and then he controls all of his clients' access points from that one controller at his business. So you don't need it on site.
Hello, you have been selected to take part in our anonymous...
Sorry, that was one of the Google pages. I think it was was 38 zeros.
Nice. So that's the Ubiquiti. That's that one. I use OpenMesh. And the reason I use OpenMesh is a couple things. I have a lot. The clients that I have want both a public and a private. And the OpenMesh just makes it super simple. You have four SSIDs you can apply with your OpenMesh. You can only apply one of them to your WAN. So that's the one that's going to get, you know, your IP address from your local DHCP server or DHCP router, either way. And then everything else will get its IP address from the OpenMesh device. And it does a 10 dot on a /8, and it's pretty random. And you can isolate each of those to just be its own. So I can put a OpenMesh device, get it configured, up and running, really quick, really fast, and I have a separate isolated network for both my private and both my public networks. And that's why, and it's cloud-based, the controller's in the cloud, so I don't have to worry about that. There's mobile apps. So it's, you know, maybe it's me being lazy. I don't want to look at it that way, but it's just a preference. And, you know, choose what use what works well for you. Don't let us tell you what's good and what's bad, but that's my little thing, is that I've just found them to be a little more bulkier and the open mesh interface is really slick, really easy, and it's just up and running and you're good to go. That's my thoughts.
That sounds good. I used Ubiquiti once or twice and I had problems with them. So, but they weren't things that we put in. They were things that other people put in we had to take care of, and I didn't care for it. We had too many problems with it. So I've never implemented it myself because of the problems I had.
I concur on the open mesh. I use them for probably 60 to 70% of my clients, and the others I use Ruckus. And Ruckus has a similar setup where, well, you used to have a controller, but now they do have a unleashed product where you don't have to have a controller. The first access point acts like a controller, so then you can add others and have them controlled by the first access point. Now, the only downside with that is it does have to be obviously on that network. So usually, you know, you have to log into the customer site to get to a Ruckus device. Whereas with Open Mesh, you just log into a web panel. And if you do sub accounts, you can have all of your customers with one login and you just switch back between the customer sites. You have all the access points. Open Mesh does four SSIDs. So you can separate them out really easy. So I like the Open Mesh.
Do you guys use the Meraki by any chance?
No.
No, I had one client that had one, but they didn't pay for the subscription.
Right.
So it wasn't working.
Right. I've got one client that has one, and they have a cloud interface. And it's just, when you were talking Ruckus, I was thinking Meraki. And so then I logged in. I was like, oh, wait, no, it's Meraki. So they do have a cloud interface, but I have not, you know, the problem. Before that, I used a product called Aerohive, and it had a cloud-based controller and everything. But the access points themselves were like $600 to $700 a piece. And then you had to pay for power supplies and stuff with it. And we just replaced the whole, this was at a school, replaced all of them with Open Mesh and saved a whole lot of money.
Now, the Meraki is you have to maintain a subscription, right?
Yes.
To
work. I believe so.
Yes, you
they,
do.
And I don't know if they have a subscription or not, and they seem to work. So it actually says license problem. but it's up and people, and they're using it. So I'm not sure.
Are they actually? Remember, yeah. They connected it to another access point.
No, that's the only access point on site at that little thing. And they just, I was there, and they just like, no, we just want to use this one. And it works. I said, okay.
Huh. Interesting. I thought you had to have a subscription for it to work at all.
That's maybe what they said.
It's just so old that I had to wipe it and start from scratch with it because we couldn't find any information about it.
I mean, that wasn't documented somewhere, like on informedit.net?
No, the last IT person did not do that.
Oh, well. That would have saved some work for you.
It would have saved some work for me if I went to informedit.net.
But you've already done that two shows ago.
Well, I know. But I already have it documented. It's not for me. It's for other people to document at informedit.net. I feel like I'm holding a soda can right now.
Like the IT crowd with that when that one they were – playing the friend face. Remember the friend face episode on IT Crowd?
I watched the IT Crowd. I do not remember that, though.
Oh, that was one of the best episodes of all of friend face. Anybody who's listening has not watched IT Crowd needs to go watch IT Crowd, especially the first season. First season is the best season.
Yeah, it's okay.
The last couple of shows, it off the rails.
That was going.
Well, you could feel that they were trying to end it, and they just didn't know how. And so they just were like, well, let's do this. Like, not so much.
But the friend face episode, that's a great episode.
Oh, they're all – there's a lot of them that are – I like the stress one. I'm going to ask myself a very serious question.
That's a good show. I don't buy many shows, but I bought all of those.
They're just fun to put on in the background.
I'm going to put on my slightly larger glasses.
It's totally something Moss would say.
good times.
So I guess we could ask our audience, if you do watch IT Crowd, what is your favorite IT Crowd episode?
Yeah, I might go with Friend Face.
All right. I think mine is, gosh.
Or the first episode. The first episode is really good, too.
I don't know. There's a lot of them.
I like the dude living in the basement that they didn't know about.
Yeah. Richmond.
Is that his
name? I think one of the funnier ones is that when they have the holiday party at Jen's house and they all come over and they have to act normal.
Yes.
I like when Roy was trapped under a desk. And that was with Richmond. They said, if you don't do something quick, Jen, it's just going to be me, you, and Tim Burton over here.
All right. I'm going to it's going in the holiday list.
All right. Well, I guess that'll do it for one night, right? We've gone off a little bit, just like the IT crowd. If you want to send us an email, question, comment, podnutspro@podnuts.com. Unless you want to send one to somebody privately, it's just our name. For instance, matt@podnuts.com or martin@podnuts.com. I will give you Marvin's, but you can probably guess it.
Hint, it's not Marvin@podnuts.
All right. So any last words before we sign off here? Obando?
Thanks for the air, guys.
Thanks for the trees.
Thanks for the trees.
Thank you for the warm weather. I was wearing shorts today.
I'm wearing shorts right now.
Never mind. Continue.
I will be on next week, but the week after that, I think will to be determined, right? Or actually,
well, we have a tentative schedule, and it depends on who shows. I assume that it's going to be based on weather. There may be snow involved that week, or at least cold.
So are we caught up on release dates? Are these coming out pretty fast
as
now?
As a matter of fact, the last episode, 89, just got released a couple of days ago. So we are almost to basically caught up. I'm sure a couple of people have listened to it by now.
I was a little early in my Merry Christmas and Happy New Year comment, I guess.
Just have to hold it. Be patient.
Yep. Maybe we should do this when we're recording. Let's just record in 10-minute segments, and we can do like 6 shows a night and get our numbers up really fast. We can be episode 500 in no time if we do that.
We could.
This could have been episode like 89, 90, 91, 92, 93.
We could do that. I mean, listen, you're a celebrity, and celebrities usually come in and they film multiple shows a day. So we could just do the same thing. We just tape multiple shows a night.
I don't want to record longer. Just break it up into multiple shows.
I didn't say
do one show and just do 6 copies of the same show.
But this could be easily 6 shows. We could get our numbers up higher than any other tech podcast if we did that pretty quick.
Now that we've given everybody else a roadmap,
but then they'd be copying us because we said it first.
Yeah, you're stressing me out though. It's too much.
All right.
Okay, so let's go ahead and put an end to this. And as per usual, our weekly quote from our esteemed forefather Benjamin Franklin: a slip of the foot you may soon recover, but a slip of the tongue you may never get over. And with that, we thank you all for listening to this episode of Podnuts Pro. And until next time, we bid you good night.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.